Okay, well, thank you everybody for this opportunity to present what we do at Verisk and go into some details of how to use our information and such. Some of the folks on this call probably have heard some of the information, and I hope it's a refresher to others and maybe an introduction to yet even some more. And this is a nice time as snow is starting to fall and blizzard warnings are set up across the central part of the country to get refreshed of the whole snow season. I'm going to go through an overview of talking about NoRisk's mission, what we do, how we do it, and how to use the information. I was given a list of quite a few questions from a lot of the different regions, and so I really hope that I can touch on most of those areas, and then at the end we'll also have the opportunity to ask some more questions as we go on. So NoRisk's mission is to support the National Weather Service's mission by producing the best estimate of snow water equivalent using all available data, and that includes the satellite, airborne, and in-situ observations to protect life and property and to enhance the national economy. The main clients for the NoRisk, initially, we really work to focus on supporting the river forecast centers by providing this information of snow water equivalent. But as our products and our mission has expanded, we have really expanded who our stakeholders are. So no longer do we just support the river forecast centers, but we work very closely with the forecast offices, many federal and state agencies, including the Corps of Engineers, the Bureau of Reclamation, New York Department of Environmental Protection. We work with private sectors. We provide our information to folks such as the Weather Channel, Weather Decisions Technology, AccuWeather, and a lot of other smaller companies as well. And then we also coordinate with a lot of the Canadian entities as well. We work closely with Environment Canada, folks in the St. John River Basin Commission, as well as folks in the Souris and Red River Basins. So what makes us very unique and what we do is the National Snow Analysis. We take all possible snow observations from ground, airborne, and satellite, and we put those into our system that we call our SNOWDIS, the Snow Modeling and Data Assimilation Process, and then we generate a vast variety of products in many different formats. So I'm going to break it down and talk about how the observations that we use. That was one of the questions that a lot of folks had of what observations do we actually use in our modeling processes and how do we use those observations. And then I'm going to talk a bit more about our modeling, what little bit of information about our model. I won't go into too many details, but then I'll focus a little bit on the assimilation process in which we use observations and such to make nudgings and corrections to the model products. And then go through some of the different products and how you can use these products and how you can share these products with your other stakeholders and other folks. Some of the main products that we make are snow water equivalent, snow depth, snow precipitation, snowpack temperature, and snow melt. And we make these products in an hourly and daily resolution at a 1 kilometer resolution. And we have mini maps in that you can gather from interactive maps. We have 3D visualizations, time series loops, national regional discussions. We have lots of text summaries, point queries. And a lot of our data can either be directly fed to your system, so we can either push data or you can pull data from us. It can be in a gridded format. It can be in flat binary GIS formats. It can be received over AWIPS and other formats. So what sort of ground observations do we use? We're very unique. We are a national center, so that we are looking at all observations for the entire country. We're not just looking at a regionally dependent. So we have both our first order stations, all stations within the National Weather Service. We have federal and state agencies, so all the NRCS snow tells, snow courses, the New England district snow courses we bring in, FAA, California, Department of Water Resources, national mesonets and surveys, so state mesonets, all of the COCORAS observations. So we do use and incorporate all COCORAS. We also ingest the MesoWest data, so 150 smaller mesonets. We also work with other international agencies, folks from the St. John River Basin, Environment Canada, BC Hydro. So currently we have over 125,000 stations in our database, and currently we have about 50,000 of those that are reporting right now. So here is just a quick snapshot of all the reporting stations that we have. And then whittling it down a bit, these are our stations that have reported snow water equivalent. This is from the last season. 2012, we received more than 6.3 million SWE observations and 8.2 million snow depth observations. Anywhere where you see a blue dot, that is a snow depth observation, and anywhere any of these yellow, this is where we flew our airborne snow survey gamma, and these are gamma snowwater equivalent observations. One of the big questions that came up from multiple folks is, how do you use these observations and where do you get the observations from? And really, a lot of focus of that was on cocoa roz. Back in 2006-2007, NoRisk began ingesting cocoa roz data. And this plot is showing that the total number of observations that we receive from other sources, gamma in the red here, and then in the blue, snowtell, has remained pretty steady. But the number of cocoa roz observers each year has grown significantly. And that has really helped our total picture within the snowwater equivalent. So since 2006, our total number of SWE number of stations has increased from about 4,000 stations to over 8,000 stations. And so our total contribution of SWE reporting stations from cocoa roz has increased from 18% to 51%. The quality of the stations within the cocoa roz, some are wonderful and some are questionable, and that's how it is with all point observations. So this has been very useful for us in coming up with a complete picture of the total snowwater equivalent states. Moving on to our airborne snow survey program, I'll go into a little bit of detail. We have two aircraft that we fly throughout the country. We have 2,478 flight lines in 37 provinces and 9 states. We also have 295 flight lines in Alaska. A typical flight line is about 10 miles long and about 1,000 feet wide. Our planes fly at 500 feet above the ground at 120 knots, and so they fly pretty low and pretty slow. That's a typical flight line. And what makes the airborne measurements really nice and extremely useful is that you can, anyone that spends much time dealing with snow knows how difficult it is to actually capture a representative snow observation. So it varies significantly across the landscape. And so using the technology, using the airborne snow survey, what we have the ability to do is integrate the total water equivalent across the areas of both the snow-free, low snow, and high snow areas. So this just gives us a better representation on a larger scale of what the snowwater equivalent observations are. The ground is always emitting gamma radiation in the photo peaks of potassium, uranium, and thorium. And so there's this background signature that we can come up with along these predetermined flight lines. Once we know what this predetermined background signature is, you can know what your typical signature will be. So we fly at 500 feet in snow-free conditions, and we will know what that background signature is. And then we will experience snow conditions, and then we will go back again and we'll refly the same flight line when there's snow conditions. And there is a direct relationship between how much gamma radiation is absorbed and how much water there is between there. So if you know what the signature was under snow conditions and snow-free conditions, we can just do a simple calculation to determine what the snow water equivalent is. Another nice component of the airborne is that it has the ability to determine how much water is in the snowpack. We're not just dealing with the snow depth. And so we're dealing with water. And when folks are out trying to take ground observations, one of the biggest challenges that we face is ice lenses in areas of ice and have actually been able to capture that ice in a snow core observation. So you have the ability to integrate over that area. We can figure out what the total water equivalent is and not just dealing with the amount of snow water equivalent in the ice. Watching the expansion of our snow survey program, many people have questioned, you know, where do we actually fly these flight lines? Where has the program expanded? The flight lines we began flying back in the late 70s, early 80s, 1980. This is the first operational year, and you can see that we focused on areas across the upper Midwest. And then this is an example from 2002-2003, and we have throughout the year areas where we conduct surveys that we've been going back to the 80s for, say, like the Lake Superior region, the Cottonwood area of Minnesota, St. John, and southern Canada. So these have been used for water supply for many, many years. But then we also try to divide our resources and be able to support areas in which there is the potential for flooding, uncertainties, and where the greatest risks are. So you can see back in 2008-2009, we spent quite a bit of time flying across the upper Midwest and the Red River Valley in North Dakota, where we had some pretty significant flooding that year. In 2010-2011, we flew over 800 hours and flew over 1,500 lines. As a result of the flooding that occurred for the Missouri River Basin, we discovered that we did not have many flight lines to support that region. So during the summer of 2011, after the 2010 flood, we worked very closely with the River Forecast Centers and the forecast offices to determine where do we need these additional flight lines. And we installed about 44 flight lines within Montana itself and 70 lines throughout the entire country. Now, over this last summer, many people ask, well, there wasn't a whole lot of snow last year, so what did you guys, what is your main focus? Well, one of the questions that we need to address is it's not always how much snow that you have, but how little you have as well. So we just need to have a better understanding of the complete snow conditions, not just in years of excess, but also in years, dry years, and especially some of these years with drought. We've also been expanding our program to support more of the mission with the soil moisture requirements that are becoming more and more needed. And so we've been expanding that as well. A new challenge that we've been facing is the wind farms that we have been popping up everywhere. So we have, you know, pilots flying at 500 feet, and there's a new wind farm that is along a pre-established flight line. So we've had to move a lot of these flight lines to accommodate either urban expansion as well as these new wind farms. So we've added 105 lines just this last season. This is an example of some of the soil moisture work that we did this last year. So this is a sample of some of the soil moisture work. So this was over a two-week period of time so that we could see the variation within the snowpack or within the soil moisture. And then we just have finished, as the slide changes here, you'll see that we have just finished up our soil moisture work for November. We flew an extensive soil moisture survey for 392 lines across many of the areas of of many areas of the country. Anytime that we do any of these airborne surveys, we generate a web page in which you can follow what the status is of the maps of the survey, as well as accessing the data. A product that we also like folks to check out is this. It's an image that is the background image itself is the modeled snow water equivalent, and each one of these points or lines is what the modeled what was actually observed by the flight line with the center point. Areas where the line and the background are in agreement, are the same color, that is where we've got agreement within the model and the airborne observation. And you'll see that there's a few lines out here where they were still showing some water equivalent. Some of that area is where we have just recently melted out, so there's quite a bit of that moisture is trapped in the soil, as well as the model may possibly have melted too fast. Anytime we're collecting any of these surveys, we do take quite a few photos as well so that the folks on the ground and the users can actually see what the snowpack conditions are. All of those photos are geotagged, and so you have the ability to then pull that into a KMLKMZ and see that through the process. This is just an example of one of the lines that they flew this last year in Montana. We also have the ability to do some flood recon in response to some of the flooding concerns and issues. This is the Red River flooding, I believe, in 2010. Not only do we use the airborne flight line network in areas of low elevation, but it also can be used quite extensively in the West under certain circumstances to help forecast water supply. Here's an example of one of our flight lines. This is out in Colorado. This is the Fraser Experimental Forest at about 12,000 feet. And typically, snowtell sites themselves are found within the tree lines, and that's what a lot of the information is used for the water supply. And so you can see many of the points are within a small region. But we have the ability to have our flight lines that we can have at the high elevation. We can go from high elevation to low elevation, and then also just low elevation lines so that we can get a complete picture of what the snowpack conditions are along all elevations within the mountains. And it provides a better picture of what the complete snow water equivalent states are. And the last component for the multi-snow sensors is the satellites. We use MODIS to derive a fractional snow cover product in which you can determine how much of a 1 kilometer pixel is actually covered by snow. But having all these observations, we have learned that observations are just not enough. We need to employ our snow modeling and data assimilation process. So our model is an energy mass balance model. It is a fully based physics model, and so we do take into account radiative energy exchanges, turbulent fluxes, and such. It's a three-layer snow. The snow layer itself has three layers. Many of the physics are based upon the Rachel Jordan snow therm model, but it also has components for the prairie blowing snow model as well as the Utah energy band. Energy balance models as well, and so it is a fully based, physics-based model. We use hourly inputs of numerical weather models. We use the rapid refresh RUC model, about 13 kilometer, and we do physically downscaling of temperature, relative humidity, wind speed, solar radiation, precipitation and precipitation type, and we have our static background layers of soil properties, land use, land cover, forest properties. We use our inputs into our snow model that is the, as I have stated, was the energy mass balance model, and then we generate various states of snow water equivalent, snow depth, snow temperature, liquid water content, sublimation, and snow melt. And then we take our state variables and we do some comparisons to the snow observations. So the observations I was discussing earlier are the ground observations, the satellite, as well as the airborne observations. We do comparisons of all those observations to our snow states to determine how well the model is performing, and then we generate our suite of products. How the simulation process works and how the data checking works is that we, every day, this is a human process, this is not an automated process, we go and take a look at all of the, we look at the observations and we generate this dot plot. Each one of those points that you see is a ground observation, and it is, we calculate the difference between the ground observation and the model, and anywhere where you start seeing a blue is showing where the model is over-simulating compared to ground observations, and red is where there's an over-simulation. But what I'd like to reiterate is just because there's a difference between the model and the state does not mean that we assimilate, and we do not necessarily assimilate daily. We only assimilate when we have a clear understanding of why there is a difference between the ground observations and the model. Sometimes there are some uncertainties within the driving data. Sometimes we have issues with the precipitation if there's an over or underestimation from the RUC. Typing issues, that is a very common issue that we see. We have issues with rain and snow, as well as just the placement of the storm track. We also have some areas where we have some uncertainties just due to the model physics. We have some issues in the Pacific Northwest. They tend to build very warm snowpacks, and we tend to melt at some points faster than the ground observations are showing. So taking a look at an example of the simulation, this is an example from a few years back where what you're looking at in the upper left-hand corner, that is the modeled snow water equivalent. And column B is this is where you're looking at all the point observations, so the differences between the point and the model. And you can see that there's a very clear pattern. There is a clear, distinguishable pattern. And I'll explain how we came to that in just a moment. And you can see that this slide C, that is our nudging or correction field that we apply directly back to the initial snow water equivalent states. So we create this nudging field, we apply it back, we rerun the model, and you end up with window D, and that is showing the corrected snow modeled states. We also, this is an example of the satellite snow cover product, so this is extremely useful in determining where the coverage of the snowpack was, which lined up very well with the observations as well. What this event was, this is an example of where we categorized freezing rain as snow. And how we did that is we generate time series plots for our 125,000 stations in which you have the ability to get 9 panels of information. And I'm just going to focus on this precipitation snow water equivalent panel for one of the stations. Looking across the top of this plot, what we're looking at is our modeled precipitation. Anywhere that is green, we modeled rain. Anywhere that is purple, we modeled snow. But if you look right across the top here, this is where we plot what the present weather observed was. So you can see we had initially rain observed, turning over to freezing rain and drizzle, and then to snow. Well, you can look at this entire time period here in which we modeled snow and it was observed as freezing rain. The temperatures at the point were right at freezing, a very difficult scenario to correct, to capture. And so using all those observations and that information, we were able to go back and correct and remove the additional water for the typing within that. Waiting for the screen to catch up. I wanted to point out, show you what the current snow modeled states are and what our current differences are. An example across the upper Midwest for the folks that were across areas of Minnesota, Wisconsin, we just experienced had a very nice snowstorm, I like snow, that came through the area that was then followed by a rain event and rain, freezing rain. And so looking at this, this is another example where we had some trickiness, and one of the questions that I received is, when do you have a lot of confidence in the model? How do you know how much confidence to have? Something that is always very difficult to deal with is precipitation typing, and when you have straight snow events, we tend to do really well. Straight rain events, we do really well, but actually capturing a rain on snow and rain turning over to snow is where some of the model, where we tend to have a few more issues. I anticipate the event that is occurring in the Northeast right now. Overall, we have some areas where we've did a little bit of underestimation, a little bit of over, but overall, feel pretty good about how the model is handling things, but that's prior to rain getting added to the mix. So this is just looking at the 60 states. Looking at a few of the points, this is another example of the time series plot. This is in the Pacific Northwest, Pigtail Peak. We're actually looking at the solid blue line, that is what the observations are showing. And they should be little blue squares, but that's no problem. There's so many there that you can actually see that the modeled and the observed are very close to one another. The purple is the density, and the lighter blue is snow depth. This is in Colorado, just another point to show that this solid blue line is appearing to trend a bit greater than the actual ground observation that you're seeing, a snow water equivalent at the snow pillow, and you can, we're overestimating. It's a small amount of overestimation. We tend to also look at the total scale of how much water equivalent we're deviating from. When you're looking across the plains, an inch of water equivalent is a large margin of error. When you're in the Pacific Northwest and an inch of water equivalent is very small in the noise. And so our threshold for assimilation and how often we do it also depends upon, you know, what is the threshold for the total snowpack. This observation I wanted to point out is that there appears to be these bad snow depth observations that are coming in. And this is an example of a site of where there's an acoustic depth sounder. And as it's snowing, it's being caught in the data itself. And so we just know to filter out those observations at that time. And you see that quite often in the West. The rain on snow event that I had talked about, this is for the Chanhassen area. We had picked up close to 30 centimeters of snow depth We actually modeled the events fairly well, but then as things had melted out and we got a couple days later, we had this rain on snow, and a lot of the rain actually, the ground was not frozen. A lot of the rain went through the snowpack and was absorbed into the ground, whereas we're still modeling a significant amount of water in the snowpack when it actually melted out the bottom of the pack. Oh, let's see here. Had some legs, sorry about that. And then the last point, this is in the northeast, just picked up a couple points in showing the observed snow water equivalent, and the model states, you know, we're looking pretty good at this point. And then as you move into our forecast period, there's a lot of noise that you're seeing, and what that is if you notice this on our website, I wanted to point it out as kind of a teaching. This is, we are in the middle of doing our update of our forecast form. And so when you see these big jumps back and forth within every hour, that is just, if you grab the screen at the wrong time or something, just understand that the forecast is running and that is the update. So give it, say, a half hour and you'll have a complete image within it. So I've talked now about our snow observations and our snow modeling data simulation process, but now I want to talk about all of the observations, the data products themselves. So we've got, as I stated, hourly and daily products in many different formats. We do generate what we can call our BARDA products, our base and average products, because we support the River Forecast Centers quite extensively. We take all of their 6,500 forecast basins and we generate a basin average for the snow water equivalent, snow depth, the aerial extent of snow cover, as well as the blowing snow sublimation, surface sublimation, snow melt, average snowpack temperature, and rain plus melt. That data all is in Chef encoded, and it gets sent over AWIPS, but then we also have many ways to access this data within our website. From the interactive snow information page, in the upper right-hand corner, there's something called quick query links. There's four different types of information that you can gather from these quick queries. You can either get information for a time series for a specific station ID. You can get time series for a basin. You can get a text product for basin averages. And then there's also some climatology for some stations as well. If you click on a listing, it'll provide you with the page that you see below. And if you'd like, you can select on any one of these river forecast basins or the river forecast centers, and it'll generate a text product. This product is very, it has the same information as the Chef product, but there's a few additions to this product here. We provide what the maximum and minimum elevation is within each of these basins, and then we also provide not only the mean, but we also provide the standard deviation with the mean and max, as well as the volume calculation for the basin itself. If you don't want to get that information through the quick query links, you also have the ability to overlay various basins and RFC boundaries, and you can query the data as well. So if you select your needed overlays on the left and come up over to this query, you have the ability to do a pull-down and select basin. By selecting the basin and highlighting the query button, you can select on any of the basins on the page. When you do that, what you're going to come up with is the information for the basin. And with a solid blue line here, this is the modeled snow water equivalent. This is the average for the basin, but you can also see the shading of what the min and max range is for the basin, as well as for the snow depth, where the green is representing the snow depth. And along the very top of this plot, you can also see the modeled percent snow covered. So this is where you can determine if a basin is 100% snow covered or what the coverage of that snowpack. We also provide you information about the basin, such as what the total area of the basin is. Focusing not just on the basin aspect, I know a lot of the folks on this call are from forecast offices, and so I wanted to focus a bit on the interactive maps and gathering the information off of our website. So our map server has a lot of information available to you. We have 62 different physical elements that you can select from on the left-hand side, and you have the ability to change the dates and advance through time. This is one example of where you are able to look at some of our forecast data. One of the other questions that has come up is the scale, that areas in the east seeing a variation from 1 to 2 inches of water equivalent in 2 to 4, 4 to 6 makes it very difficult to see some of those finer details within the snowpack. So we have a physical element on the left-hand side that you can select that is called shallow SWE. And what that changes is the scale itself. So anything greater than 18 inches of water equivalent is green, becomes green, chartreuse. But then we break down a scale from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4. Sometimes the blues, they're a little easier to discern at this point, but we have something on the left-hand side towards the bottom, and it's called the high contrast palette. By selecting the high contrast palette, we have a new color table, which makes it very easy to see some of these smaller variations within the snowpack. We also, another option that you have is to look at the SWE change. So we generate various change products. And so this is from yesterday. This is the, this is from the 17th. This is the 24-hour change. And stepping through time, this is a forecast product at the time that I generated this. So this is one example of how you can see our forecasted products is stepping through the date time. We did originally forecast 24 hours. We now forecast 72 hours, and it is now operational. So all of our products, you will have the ability to go out 72 hours. Either that information can be gathered through the interactive maps through these graphical interface or through possibly AWIPS as well as CHEF products within the basin averages. Another request that we had over the last year is a very useful information is total melt. They want to know what the total forecasted melt is. So we now generate three forecasted melt products. We have a 24-hour melt, 48-hour, and a 72-hour total melt forecasted. Another useful element to take a look at is our average snowpack temperatures. This is another way where you can see where the snowpack is beginning to warm up and ripen in many areas where you can anticipate snow melt. And this is as well as another parameter in which you can see the forecast as well. Here's our snow precipitation. Here's an example of the forecast product, the 2472. So as I said, that we have, I believe, 62 or more different physical elements that you can look at. So you can look at hourly analysis. You can look at daily analysis. You can also look at the inputs into our model through this interface. And then we also have the ability to look at observations. We do plot snow water equivalent, snow depth, air temperatures, wind speed, and other observations. This is an example of the plot for the snow water equivalent for the previous 24 hours. And this is the snow depth observations. You have the ability to, you can see it becomes very cluttered with all the observations that we have. You can zoom in on specific areas to get more information, to get a better picture. But then there's also a button on the bottom left-hand side, which I've just cut off my screen, that allows you the ability to turn off zero reports. And so that, if you are not interested in seeing the zero reports and have them removed, that's another option for these products. Another option to have to get to additional information for each one of these stations, as I stated, we have 125,000 stations in our database. They are, as you continue to zoom in, more and more of the stations are able to be seen, that you can zoom in. And then you have the ability to query each one of these stations. So if you go into the upper right-hand corner and hit the query, you have the ability to click on any one of these stations, and it'll pick up a display, a grouping of nine time series plots. So I spent a little bit of time talking about the snow water problems and snow depth, snow cover product. Then we also have modeled and observed precipitation. We have a cumulative precipitation. This is one of the products I'd like folks to use with great caution because this is just accumulating whatever information is sent to us. Some of the observers, like any other data, if they skip a storm and miss a storm, it may be a misrepresentation of how much data is actually there. So it's useful, just use with caution. And then the next plot that I'm looking at is the snowpack temperature intensity by layer. So you can see the three layers within our snowpack. And this is a really nice tool in watching a snowpack ripen and becoming ready for melt. So you can see the progression of the warming of the snowpack at the top layer, progressing to the middle layer. And here, it never quite reached the bottom layer, never became warm enough to initiate any melt. So this is a very useful tool. We also have, we plot the snow temperature, the snow surface temperature, as well as the observed air temperatures and dew points. We also have information as wind speed and relative humidity. And then we also have additional plots for surface energy exchanges and energy fluxes if you're interested in those parameters as well. Not only is there just the images that you can see, but all of the data, if you'd like, you have the ability to select and download all this data into a CVS file. Along the top, you'll also notice that we have these time windows, and it defaults to the past week or so of information. You can go back and get data going back to 2002, the first year that we started modeling. You have the ability to go back and look at all a lot of historical information as well. So this also is another opportunity to show where you can see additional forecast information. So the area to the left is the model analysis. The parameters on the right here, this is the forecasted data. As I pointed out before, all of our snow water equivalent observations, this is an example of another snow water equivalent plot. All of that data that is used to generate that plot is accessible to you and your partners as well, and you can access that through our National Snow Analysis page. And going through the NSA page, there's nine panels of each of the snow states, and you continue to scroll down, and you'll see the top 10 snow reports. So folks are always wondering, who got the most snow, how much snow has fallen? So we generate a listing of all of the snow reports. You can go ahead and see all the top 10. And then there's three links here in which you have the ability to click on each of these links, and that will pull up a product, which then also gives you the option for a text file with English units, and then it will provide the station information, such as latitude and longitude for those stations as well. And the last little bit I'm going to discuss about the National Snow Analysis in 3D. Many of our users have, emergency managers and folks don't actually have access to a GIS workstation to generate maps and to do customized products. So we generate all of our products in KML, KMZ products, which are very easy to use for end users to view and to display information. So our full suite of information is available through the KMLs, and this is just an example. We also generate, we take the HPC snowfall forecasts and we regenerate them into KML, KMZ so that we can overlay our current snow states with what the forecasted snow states are. Why some of this is really nice to see where we expect snow in areas that we've got existing snow and snow-free areas, but we also like to see areas in which we have rain on snow forecasted. It's a very useful tool to get some information of changing your snowpack conditions and say we overlay the average snowpack temperature. So areas in which we have a very warm snowpack, this is actually coming. This is the system that's going to be coming in the next couple days here. We've got areas where we've got a half inch of rain forecasted in areas where there is snow on the ground. So this is just an area to watch. It's more of a situational awareness tool of just putting more information together. All of our data as well is that you can go to the Google Maps and you can pull our information, our KML into the Google Map interface and build into what sorts of APIs and such that you'd like to do on your own. A neat tool that we've added, one of our biggest questions asked is, so how much snow fell near me? I don't know how much time can be spent with folks trying to gather this information for other users. So you have the ability here to enter in your city and state, so you can determine where are the five closest observations. We'll provide the observation as well as the distance from that location. For each of the forecast offices, through this Chef product link, there is a tab in which you can generate some reports to see what stations we're using from your forecast office. So you can select your forecast office. I just chose Boston as an option. And it'll list you the station ID and the information, and then it'll give you the count of each of the physical parameters. So these stations we receive 31 SWE reports from. This is a nice kind of a check to see if we're actually getting all the information that you have and that we are getting the data that we that you expect us to be using in our modeling. We also generate some reports of how many total reports we get for your area, as well as what new stations have been added within the last month. So just to touch back what was new for 2013, and really our forecast products are now operational from 24 hours to 72 hours. We've added some base Chef products, including all the forecasts, and we used to generate only the basin average products for 6Z. We now do 6-hour products, and we also do 6-hourly summing of products. And those are available over AWIPS or the web. If you need those products, you can request them through us. We also are generating 6-hourly GRIB 2 products, and that is available via FTP. You'll have to contact us to get the information how to grab those. We're working with folks to get those available over AWIPS. Currently, our products are available through D2D, but the data that you're receiving and displayed over D2D is at a degraded vertical and horizontal resolution. So we're also working with folks to get our full resolution and our 1 kilometer full grid into AWIPS as well. So we also have our accumulated milk grids, and those are generated in Chef products as well. And we've been working with folks in Canada as well as other agencies throughout the country to get additional information to support our modeling and assimilation processes. The last little bit I wanted to share is over the last 3 years, we've worked very closely with the River Forecast Centers and some of the forecast offices on the call here to have some additional collaboration. And it's been an extremely useful tool from the folks from NoRisk, since the folks in the office are very in tune with their observers in their areas and the situations that are occurring. And it's a really nice format for us to get a better handle on the snow states from our perspective of how well the model is handling and from getting input as well. And so we can share our expertise and knowledge with the River Forecast Centers and forecast offices that they can share with their partners, but we can also gain information back to use in our modeling. We originally started with just the folks in the Northeast as kind of the test area, and it has expanded now to include the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Ohio. We have the forecast offices, some of the RFCs participate as well. We have some international partners as well, folks from St. John and other areas. We've expanded to North Central. I don't believe all partners have and all forecast offices were quite we're starting small and expanding, and so now we'd like to invite all of the forecast offices for the Central, North Central River Forecast Center, as well as MBRFC, if they'd like to participate in these weekly calls. And then we'd like to continue westward, and we are working to expand with possibly the Colorado Basin folks, as well as the Northwest River Forecast Center as well. And so this is just a very nice opportunity for us to get a better understanding of the snow conditions and share information and learn from one another. We have one other article. Many people have asked, so how can we get some more information about NoRisk? And so I have Honor Snow and Science Technology page. There is this, we have a really nice article that was written up last year and published that you can link, and does a nice overview of all of the products and how the NoRisk office works. And so this is available off of our NoRisk Science and Technology page. And that's really a lot of information in a short amount of time. And I wanted to give a nice overview for everyone to get a handle of, on a broad brush scale, since we had folks that have never sat in on any of these calls before. But I am also willing to, if the specific forecast offices or folks that are on the call, if there's specific questions that you'd like me to step you through how I got at some of this information or how to use it for specific scenarios, I'd be more than willing to spend time with you in your office going through this information. So at that point, if they want to open up the line, if there's any questions.
Absolutely, and at this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of OHD. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hi, Carrie. This is Jeff Bonin here. Nice presentation. Carrie, on one of the slides about halfway through, you made reference to some data products that you can get at, and it showed soil moisture products at different depths of the soil profile.
Currently, the soil moisture, all of the soil moisture information that we have accessible is from the Airborne Snow Survey Program. And so those are just modeled, observed gamma soil moisture products. Was it the slide for the Michigan that you were referencing, where we did a couple different time steps, time periods?
There was a slide that just had a list of all sorts of different data, I think it was.
Oh, I know. At that point, that was just a product that we are no longer putting onto the web at the moment. It's more of a research, and it's a non-operational product. So that is the slide from last year.
And that, when you were doing that, that was the gamma retrievals.
No, that was actually, I was confusing two different slides, and so what you were discussing and what you saw, that was an actual modeled soil moisture at various levels, and that had completely nothing to do with the GAMMA program.
And what?
There were two independent, and it was the rapid refresh soil moisture.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of a participant whose information we were unable to collect. If you have pressed star 1 to ask a question, please go ahead and state your name. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Troy in Boise, and thanks for all the great information. You may have covered something that I can do this with, but is it possible to query or bracket a particular, say, storm and get a snow depth like analysis or accumulation analysis from that particular storm, say for a 24, 36 hour period, something like that? Or is that something that would be possible for the future, having a tool that can do that?
That is something that we're looking into, as we have been looking into modifying and adding enhanced capabilities to our website, as having a little bit more of the user input or control to generate some of those products. That is something that I will definitely add to the list of requests. That's something that we can look into adding as an enhancement.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Again, to ask a question, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of John Reed. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Sean at the Mid-Atlantic River Forecast Center. I had a question passed on to me. It was actually from the media and through the WFO. It's a detailed question about your website, so if it's better to answer offline, that's fine. The question was, on your website, there's a place where it shows a map of the U.S., and then on the upper right-hand corner, it tells you the percent percent snow coverage.
Yep. That is from the NSA page. Yep.
Okay, and so the question was, is that a percent of snow cover just in CONUS, or does it include the full extent of the map that's being shown that includes Canada?
So what you will see on that page, there is a area that has kind of a white outline that is right next to the left of it, and that is our initial snow modeling region. So those are the areas that flow that contribute directly into the drainage for the U.S. And so that entire area, that is the extent.
Okay, that makes sense. And also if you click on a regional map, I guess the same answer would apply?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And there are no further questions at this time. I turn the call back over to the presenters.